Disclaimer. The views and opinions you hear expressed by the participants in this show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. The show tapes live most Thursdays on YouTube, 5:30 p.m. Pacific. Check my Twitter feed, ActionZaku, for more. Hope you enjoy the show. Everybody, welcome to Handcast. I'm Zach Burchy. Jacob's here.
Hey, guys.
I got kind of a low-key mailbag show for you this week. What did we do last week? Devilman.
Yeah.
That was something else.
No, Devilman was 2 weeks ago. Time flies. Last week was a winter wrap-up sort of a thing.
Winter wrap-up, right. Isn't that a My Little Pony thing?
Oh, Jesus. Why do you remember that?
I don't know. These things just float around in my stupid brain. Yeah. Anyway, so this week we're kind of low-key, just some mailbag. You know, we got some emails, and we got a lot of Twitter questions, actually, so we're going to get to those in just a minute. But next week we got a special show. I'm having on some folks from Seven Seas Publishing. Speaking of Devilman, they're putting Devilman out early this summer. And I'm pretty excited about that. And those guys, I've known them for a very long time. They're doing a lot of interesting stuff, so it should be a cool interview. And then I'm planning a bunch more interview shows for the next like 3 or 4 months. So look forward to that. Some of those should be pretty good. Hopefully all of them will be good. Hopefully.
Yeah. Sounds good.
All right. So let's just dig right into the mail. I would imagine anything we've seen will come up as a result of these questions. At least it seems like it. Mm-hmm. So if there's anything that you're like, look, I really need to talk about this, just throw it out there. And we'll get to it.
Okay. It's been pretty low-key season so far, so, you know.
Yeah, we're only like a week or two in. Mm. Like, today I just posted the first user rankings.
Uh-huh.
The very first one for the season, so it's early days. Yeah. Early days.
The one thing that was just added, like, as of today was that Fate cooking show.
Yeah, which I watched and found it to be relaxing and enjoyable. Maybe that's all it takes is just like, hey, I recognize these characters.
Yeah, right. It's like, I know these people. Now they're making tempura.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it was slow and exactly what I expected, I guess. Like, It is exactly what it says on the tin. Like,
right.
I didn't know it was going to have, like, Lancer in it and stuff. That's fun.
Well, yeah, like that. So it obviously must take place sort of in a like just to the side sort of world or dimension where like these are just normal people and there is no Grail War, because although he still calls her Saber and stuff like that, but there's no other way that you would have like Lancer as a person just like selling meat or whatever he's doing.
Just kind of went with it. I didn't really think too much about that. I figured it was just an Inuyasha side story thing, like alternate universe. And even if it's not, it's like, oh, this is supposed to be a specific time. I mean, there's nothing preventing Lancer from putting on a t-shirt and a jacket and picking up some cup noodles. Like, that's not something he couldn't do.
Maybe. You know, it's hard to say. And you're right. Like, you really shouldn't overthink it. I'm just assuming that Fate fans
are going to be... Well, in Fate Zero, the servants did, like, interact like that pretty normally.
Yeah, well, they can change clothes and stuff like that. It just doesn't really... It's like, I think this is maybe not during a Grail War. I think this is just sort of an AU, a coffee shop AU, as they call them. But
yeah,
like,
well, you know what? I'm sure somebody will make it very clear exactly when it takes place and whether or not it means anything for the grander.
I'm sure it does not, but yeah.
Yeah, but it's like, it looks good. I like the different character designs, like the kind of cutesy Hallmark card character designs with the, you know, sort of... I don't know what the exact term for that is, where there's a lot of line breaks.
Peanutsy.
Peanutsy, yeah, it's not peanuts, a little peanutsy. It looks like that Haruhi Suzumiya spinoff.
Yeah.
Yeah, what was that called? I don't even remember the name of it anymore.
Now, there were like a million, so you're going to have to be more specific.
The most recent one, the
Nagito Yuki-chan.
Nagito Yuki-chan. No, it was called something longer than that.
The Melancholy of Nagato.
Was it just the Melancholy of Nagato Yuki-chan?
I think so.
No, it was a different word, I thought. Can't even remember.
Fucking
remember. Can't even remember. There's too much anime. Anyway. All right. So let's take some questions from email. First up, these are email questions. Now that Cardcaptor Sakura has been rebooted, well, I mean, it's been continued.
Yeah.
It's a soft reboot.
Mm-hmm.
The story is a thin excuse.
Right.
So just
I have to collect all the cards again.
What? Again?
We're starting from the beginning, but this time I'm in middle school.
I can't believe I have to do all of that over again.
Can you? And everybody's like, yes. Third time.
What's left from the 90s that you think should come back? Says Christopher 87. Well, not that much from the 90s has actually come back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everyone will go on and on forever about Cowboy Bebop. That'll probably never... Maybe it'll come back at some point. Maybe somebody will put down the money and be like, okay, all just you guys, this, you're, yeah. I'm going to pay you so much that every other project you have lined up, you can just break that contract. I don't think that would happen in the first place.
Mm.
But let's say the stars aligned for whatever reason, and you couldn't force it, but the stars aligned and they were able to make some more. I don't know. Would you be excited about that? Yeah, probably.
I mean, for me, like stuff that I love from the 90s, I guess maybe they could do the Hunter x Hunter thing with Yu Yu Hakusho. That could be okay.
Trigun.
Yeah, well, the thing I was going to say was, yeah, Trigun. Just
where's that Fruits
the
Basket reboot?
Oh, right, yeah. Reboot Fruits 2000? Basket.
That's 2001, isn't it?
Yeah, the manga started in the late 90s.
Okay.
But it's really early, so it basically feels like a...
Yeah, like all that stuff, you know, I feel like there's plenty. Like, you could remake Outlaw Star if you wanted to. You could...
Right.
Like, all that stuff is all... I personally think it's ripe for just a remake.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just remake it. Like, if you remade Trigun, I think that's a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like something like that will eventually happen, too, because there's such a need for content, I guess. Like, big ticket stuff like that seems like a no-brainer, but mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah, it's a good question. I just want to see, like, I've already said this, but like I just want to see the big wacky crazy stuff now that they can draw it, like from the Trigun manga made, you know, like the guy in a coffin with six robot arms driving around on treadmill wheels.
I mean, my attitude about this stuff is kind of like this, because I feel like the knee jerk reaction is to eye roll at remakes, to just say, oh, remakes, but like. They don't really remake stuff that often in anime.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not that common a thing.
Yeah.
And, like, there's so much anime now that, like, it's just, like, a pleasant thing that I recognize. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just one among many. There's lots of different anime. Mm-hmm. If they started remaking stuff from the 90s, it would just be another thing. And if you didn't like it, you could just not watch it or whatever. You know, like, I'm fine with it. Like, I want all that stuff to come back.
And for,
I really don't have a problem with it.
If it wasn't, like, OVAs or whatever, if it was a TV production in the 90s, there was shit that they just couldn't do back then that they can do much more easily
now.
Yeah,
exactly.
And they should take advantage of it.
Exactly.
Know?
Or even if you did something like... You know, you took, like, a rom-com and remade it, like, even like a Marmalade Boy or something like that. Like, I don't know, bring it back. Just bring it back. It's cool.
Right.
I'm cool with remakes. Officially, I'm cool with remakes. Mm-hmm. And if it sucks, well, the original exists, so...
Yeah, exactly.
You know. Anyway, moving on. All right. This one, I think you'll kind of already have talked about a little bit, but Jacob, what is your ideal Digimon game? And it's a little old, I guess. Have you started playing Hacker's Memory yet?
Right, yeah. So my write-up of Hacker's Memory and my impressions of it just went up on the site yesterday, the point that you're hearing this. It's today, actually. But, like, and I really liked it. My ideal Digimon game would be... I guess the thing that the current games don't do, besides just optimizations, like let people skip cutscenes, skip the backtracking, better level design, you know, stuff that's just, okay, well, this was a somewhat budgety JRPG. Ignoring that stuff, I guess the biggest thing that I would want added to a Digimon game that doesn't exist is giving personalities, like Fire Emblem style, giving personalities to the Digimon characters, because that was such a key part of the show's appeal, is that they were kind of like these kids, like spirit animals, and they had very specific personalities that complemented the characters, which is not something that Pokemon does, really. Like, Pokemon, they kind of have personalities, but for the most part, they don't. Like, they don't talk, for one thing. So Digimon having a sort of a complex personality and being able to, like, play that up in the story instead of them just being tools. Like, most of the games, they're just tools. So, yeah, I guess stuff like Cyber Sleuth, which is just easy monster builder, propulsive, JRPG style thing, but then just give the Digimon personalities and make that the story instead of adding like anime stereotype human characters. Like, it's like the human characters in Transformers. Nobody gives a shit. Just flesh out the Digimon instead. So I guess that's what I would want added.
All right. And if people want to read more, they can check out This Week in Games, which has your full sort of early thoughts. You played a lot.
30 hours thoughts.
So yeah, which is, you know,
70% of the game.
70%. Yeah, that's a lot. Okay, I like this question from Ganon. The Ganon.
Oh, wow. Oh.
I thought he was dead.
Well, he was resurrected a while ago.
Yeah, that keeps happening.
Over and over, actually.
A lot, yeah. I feel like it's happened a lot.
It has.
I've been in scenarios where I keep seeing that happen.
Why does this keep happening? Anyway.
What's your go-to item when you go out for Japanese food? Do you have a favorite dish? Something that you always order? Good question. I mean, well, okay, so it's different if I'm in Japan. Mm-hmm. If somebody has okonomiyaki, though, I'm getting it.
Right.
And that's only because it's rare. Like, if more than one restaurant, like, if a lot of restaurants had it, it's very bad for you. So I don't think I would get it very often. But
it's very good, though.
It is extremely good. Yeah. I mean, I don't want to say okonomiyaki because I hardly ever get it.
But you would if it was just more available more often, which it isn't.
Well, no, I wouldn't. It's real. Like, that's not really part of my regular diet. Like,
okay.
It certainly is not. Favorite dish? That's so hard to choose. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, a really good bowl of pork ramen is really, really, really good.
Tonkatsu ramen.
I really like a tonkatsu bowl. I really like, fresh tempura is like is extremely good. There's so much good stuff. I don't know. What about you? Look.
You know,
Japan style curry.
Yeah. So curry rice.
Which is true for me too. Like, that's true for me. Like, I would eat that every single day if I could.
Yeah.
It's the best.
Curry rice.
I think the answer is true for both of us. Curry rice.
Yeah. And onigiri on the side. Just lots of rice and meat. I like rice gravy and meat.
Now I want curry.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll make some. I got really obsessed with making perfect curry. Not really obsessed, but like Saturday has been curry night in our household for a little while because I'm just trying to get it right, trying to get it to taste right. Mm-hmm. For the longest time, I was making shrimp curry, which you don't really let the meat render out in the sauce. Like, the fat doesn't render out. There's really not much fat in shrimp to begin with, but like that doesn't really render out into the sauce. And I was wondering, like, what is this missing flavor? What's the flavor that is missing from the sauce? Mm-hmm. Turns out it was fat. So when I make chicken curry, it tastes a little, like, much closer to what I'm trying for, but I still have not quite figured it out exactly. Like, it doesn't taste exactly how I want.
It does taste good, though.
The search continues. Mm-hmm. Yes, no, I look, and I appreciate you saying that. You're the other person that has to eat it. But, like, I'm going to get it exactly right someday. If you have a really good curry recipe and you're listening to this, send it to me. Zach@animenewsnetwork.com. I would love to give it a shot. I will try your curry recipe if you send it to me. Okay. Let's see. Last email question from the Bosa Zoku. What do you think it would take for you to start, like episode one, start one of the long-running Shonen Jump series right now? Is there any scenario in which you would start something like One Piece right now from episode one?
Scenario would be I was getting paid to do it, or if it's for a project, but no, otherwise I definitely don't have time.
Yeah. Barring professional stakes, mm-hmm. barring like, hey, we're going to do a thing where we watch all of One Piece or whatever, for whatever mm-hmm. content related reasons.
Yeah.
That's always for people like us in our position. That's always a question mark. But barring that, mm-hmm. I would have to have a tremendous amount of time and, like, I don't know, I feel like I have a hierarchy of long-running stories I've always meant to get to. One Piece mm-hmm. is fairly high on that list, mm-hmm. so I think it would really not take that much, although I wouldn't have to start from episode one.
Right.
So I guess in the spirit of the question, I've never really dug into Dragon Ball very much at all. If I were to start watching Dragon Ball, I would have to start from episode one. So what would it take for me to start episode one right now? I would say a work reason.
Yeah.
Or it's a situation where they're like, okay, Zach, we're going to strand you on a desert island, and you can only take one of these two shows with you. Mm-hmm. And one of them is, like, the King of Queens. And the other is like Dragon Ball Z.
Right.
I'm like, so, well, give me Dragon Ball.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Like, I'll watch all of Dragon Ball on this desert island. But like that, you know, like a situation where I have all the time in the world and there is not another longer story or long story that I'm excited to get to. Like, that's kind of what it would take. Because I just don't want to commit to something that's that many episodes. Mm-hmm. I just don't. And it's not like there's never going to – maybe in my like retirement years I'll watch all of Dragon Ball Z. Mm-hmm. But now it just never feels like I have time for it. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah. Like so for example, for This Week in Anime, when Black Clover reaches a point – at which there anything in it has happened at all, which is apparently not. Like, they've gone into filler as of, like, early episodes. They're already in filler. It's absurd. We're definitely going to cover it on This Week in Anime, and I'm kind of drafted to do that. So I will catch up on Black Clover at some point, but it's because of work. And other than that, yeah, I'd have to literally be on a desert island or getting paid or doing something for a project. But just like, oh, well, I'm – or like
which is
really
bad because that like that kind of sounds like I wouldn't watch that unless
no,
you
it's
paid
not,
me. But
it's
that's
just
not
so
the sentiment.
Long, right?
That's not the sentiment.
Yes.
It's just like the commitment there is something like you're making a choice when you engage with something like that. Mm-hmm. And to me, when you choose to engage with Dragon Ball from episode one, what you're chiefly saying is I have lots of spare time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's like –
which is fine.
And One Piece is definitely the one – like if I – oh, if I – to pick one that like I want to watch, it would definitely be One Piece because it's the most interesting. Like I actually did watch a bit of it when I wrote the list. It was like best villains of the year because I had been reading Sam Leach's write-ups and he described this character a lot. Big Mom is this like, you know, super intense pirate villain, and she was just so fascinating the way he described her. And she gets musical numbers, which I did watch, and it was like, this is wacky. So like so yeah, technically I watched like, what is it, episode 800-something of One Piece just to get a handle on this character to write that piece. But, yeah, maybe I could, like, if I ever really wanted to catch up, maybe I could, like, read what I can skip and, like, read recaps of stuff and that kind of thing just to, like, take some of the edge off because it's, like, a million episodes.
Yeah. The last part of that question, he says, do you think these shows struggle to make new fans because of how long they are? I think there's a barrier of entry, but those shows are in the public eye constantly, and there's a reason that they spend so much money promoting them all the time. Like, they right. wouldn't be as big as they are continuously over such long periods of time if they weren't constantly making new fans. So, no. I don't think that they struggle, especially with kids. Like, kids don't give a shit. They're going to start watching it. They're going to see it on TV and start watching it. So,
right,
like,
yeah.
You know, and they'll get into it and want to go back and watch all of it. So, yeah, no, I don't know. Like, every time I get asked about that, I start thinking about it. I'm like, you know, I would like to start, you know, you start doing that. Mm-hmm. And it's like, don't let yourself down.
Yeah, no, I always have, I feel like my brain is constantly pretty busy with other stuff that I never like, maybe I should catch up on one. That doesn't even cross my mind because there's too many other things I have to do. So, yeah.
Okay. Let's go ahead and get to Twitter questions. We got plenty of them this time. Grant Thief asks, would Boston and Philly, those are our cats, mm-hmm. tolerate you guys having a porg? So, like, one of those Star Wars puffins.
Right.
I mean, it's a fictional creature.
Right, so, yeah.
No, I mean, first of all, the idea of having a fourth pet in this apartment,
yeah.
Just...
We also have a bunny.
Like, rabbit. If you zoomed in on my face right now, you'd just see, like, flames in my eyes. Like, burning and destruction.
All sides of my face.
Yeah, the kitten we adopted is enough of a handful.
She's very much a handful, yeah.
If I bought a porg toy, which I did not, surprisingly did not, it would have been ripped up by now.
Mm-hmm.
By the cat. Yeah. All right. Trick the TM asks, who are your dream pairing of voices, either for the subbed or dubbed version of Pop Team Epic? Well, I mean, let's see. I mean, look, like anyone?
Yeah, I think you have to go to anyone for this to be an interesting sort of answer.
Anyone?
Yeah.
Then, like, well, Tone Loke for sure.
Yeah.
Always my go-to.
Right.
He's my man. Mm-hmm. Tone Loke. I'm going to say just Tone, maybe Tone Loke and, like, Snoop Dogg. But lots of hip-hop recording artists, like lots of those guys, I feel would make it really, really, really good. Like that would be fucking great if you actually got those guys to tape those lines.
Right.
Amazing. And have them lean really hard into the persona while they're doing it too. Like that would be cool. What about you?
I think like the stereotypical answer is why do I always forget? I don't think it's Nobuhiro Wakamoto, but it's something Wakamoto, you know. You know, like the Charles Britannia. And I feel like that's I'm sorry, I got his name wrong probably, but I feel like that's maybe the easiest answer. However, I don't know, like, having just listened to that English dub and heard what they did with it, which is good, like, they just let the actors make really strange sounds, that you don't hear, you know, that's them, because you've heard Chris Sabat and Ian Sinclair and stuff like that 1,000 times, but these aren't voices that they ever get to make in any other anime. It's just really, really pushing their range and into strange places and adding weird affects and stuff like that. So I kind of just looking forward to hearing Funimation's stable of voice actors. Like, they're going to get to cover, if there's 12 episodes times two, that's 24 times, that's 48. So that's 48 actors are going to get the chance to be one of the girls in Pop Team Epic. And I think that's just kind of neat, where that many people are just going to get to do whatever the hell they want with their voice and it'd be fun. So I'm just kind of looking forward to that. I don't have to think of like, oh, who would I want to be in this? So it's like, well, 48 of Funimation's voice actors probably are going to be in it. So, they'll just get to do whatever they want in whatever particular, 12-minute segment they get. So, you know.
I think that's great. I think that's a great point, and I would say also consider Tone Loc.
Yeah. Well, right. Yeah. No, that's a good point as well. I just didn't have anything like wacky or out there to add, so I was just like, well,
wacky.
You know,
that's not wacky. I'm not trying to be funny.
No, I'm saying that
get Tone Loc.
I'm not saying it's a bad idea. I'm saying wacky as in it
I'm
wouldn't
serious,
happen.
Jacob. I'm never joking when I bring up Tone Loc.
Okay, I'm sorry. I just mean it wouldn't happen. That's all. But you know.
All right. Let's see here. Fuzzy Proxy asks, a train leaves Cleveland at 5:30 p.m., traveling toward Detroit at 80 kilometers an hour.
42.
Another train... Hey, don't get...
Okay, sorry.
Just calm down. Another train leaves Detroit in the opposite direction at the same time, going 110 kilometers per hour. What is your preferred style of humor, and what anime would you say matches that taste? Boy, it's handy that I have a Pop Team Epic to point to. Because that is a lot of my sense of humor. But I describe myself as having a very broad sense of humor. I watch a lot of different kinds of comedy. And Pop Team Epic is the current thing that I think very much captures it. The other stuff I would say, like Girlish Number, I thought was really funny. Those are kind of the examples that come to mind right away. Anime comedy and I typically don't get along because I think I have a very Western sense of humor in general. Pop Team Epic is one of the closest things I've seen to like, oh yeah, no, I can totally get behind this. Or like this, I recognize this as something that is funny to me. Mm-hmm. I think those two are kind of the biggest recent examples. I feel like there's something else lingering in the back of my head, but I can't quite think of it. What about you, Jacob?
So weirdly, my preferred style of comedy is not scripted. I don't mean improv. I mean like what I go to laugh is like personalities that I enjoy just sort of riffing in an edited fashion. So like the McElroy brothers, like Trixie and Katya from their web show, that kind of thing. Like what I go to laugh is actually not scripted at all. So my favorite kind of comedy isn't something that you can write, period. However, for anime comedy, I like stuff that has like a bit of heart to it. That's like, it's not the goal is not just jokes. So my favorite kind of anime comedy is like it's actually a drama, but there are jokes in it. So like Ouran High School Host Club was a really good example of this, and Nozaki-kun was a good example of this, where like there's sweetness and there's like, oh, it's like, I guess a lot of it is shoujo comedies because like There's a heartening, like, sort of life lesson aspect to it, or there's cutesiness to it. The How to Keep a Mummy show this season is a good example of that, where it's like, oh, this is just adorable. But it's also funny because there's a little bit of crassness to it. But yeah, like, if I had to pick a scripted comedy, it would be that. Like, cute and heartwarming, but also some good jokes. It can't be tepid jokes. It can't be, like, healing slice of life. Like, that stuff bores me to tears. It has to be kind of cutting, biting, stupid jokes, but they're in there with, like, cute stuff.
Yeah. I used to point to Cromartie High School, which was a pretty good example of it at the time, but, mm-hmm. you know, that was very different. I haven't actually revisited Cromartie in a very long time. I'd be curious to take another look at that.
The segment, the 8 minutes, the segment where it's the plot is just one guy trying to remember how a song, what the name of a song that he has stuck in his head is one of the funniest, like, I guess anti-comedy type things that I've seen in an anime for sure. So that holds up, and there's bits that hold up for sure. Some of them don't, but I would say its strike zone is about 60%, which is pretty good for that kind of absurdist humor.
Okay. Mon Rocker, our pal, asks, what are your favorite 2017 movie lists? So I guess like a top five.
Oh, there's so many. I
wrote one, but like it changed a little bit.
I mean, so in no order, I guess, just like the ones on the top of your head that are closest to your heart this year.
Sure, go ahead.
Okay, well, Lady Bird, Call Me By Your Name, I, Tonya, my brain just stopped, Star Wars The Last Jedi, which is actually my favorite, by far, far and away my favorite Star Wars anything that I've ever seen. So I'm not just saying, oh, I would put Star Wars every year. I wouldn't. Like, I don't feel that strongly about Star Wars, but The Last Jedi was really good, and I really loved it.
Yeah, all those for me, plus,
Phantom Thread, too, yeah.
Yeah, those, I think you pretty much nailed it.
I liked Coco a lot as well. I would add Coco to that.
Yeah, I didn't like Coco as much as everybody else I know did, but I also never got to see it again, so I'll probably see it again and see what's up after that.
Mm-hmm.
I will reevaluate upon seeing it again.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like there's something I'm forgetting, but... That is a good list. I've seen all but two of the Oscar movies nominated for Best Picture.
Uh-huh.
I'm not quite sure what's going to win. There's no like absolute firm. This is definitely going to take it this year. And some picks that are there actually wasn't that much suspense or surprise this year. Like very few surprises, I would say overall. But I've seen everything except Darkest Hour and The Post, which are kind of two of the most Oscar-baity.
Get Out was this year, wasn't it?
It was, yeah.
God, this year was 1,000 years long, so it's easy to forget.
And it's nominated for Best Picture.
Oh, it is? Huh. Yeah. But yeah, the stuff that happened earlier in the year, I know that there was some good stuff. It's just I don't have a list in front of me, and I've forgotten it because it's just so... but this year was much better than last year for movies. 2016 for movies was fucking kind of a crapshoot, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, I remember it.
This one was much better.
Not being super, super, super great in 2016. I think this year was, like, very close to... It was a really strong year, I thought.
I think so, too.
You know, I don't know. Some people... which is weird to me, because I see people saying stuff like... this was a really weak or bad year for movies. And I wonder, like, what movies they saw. Maybe Blade Runner, 2049.
Right, Blade Runner. That was really good.
I was like, what am I... that one. Yes. Mm-hmm. Blade Runner is also on my list. But I think, like, I didn't see I, Tonya until very recently when I thought that was great. And it would probably knock Blade Runner off of a top five. But I need to see Blade Runner again, too. I bought the Blu-ray. I'm going to sit down and watch it at some point. Yeah, I don't know. I need to revisit all this shit. But there was a lot of really great movies last year. Stuff I'm excited to go back to.
Yeah, I would say all of your list, I would definitely endorse. Which I point that out because sometimes there are not overlaps between us, but I think we liked a lot of the same stuff this year. So.
Yeah, I like some stuff more than you. You like some stuff more than me. Like, I outright hated Three Billboards.
Right. Well, I didn't
thought it was good.
No, I didn't actually. I thought it was
interesting. You thought it was Best Picture.
I didn't. These are lies.
You thought it was the finest film
I thought
of
Three
this
Billboards,
or any year.
I thought Three Billboards was interesting but troubled. I have come to like it less after it was embraced by the public and by even like the conservative public, because I was like, oh, well, whatever this might have said, whatever this might have been interested in saying or talking about, it didn't succeed if it was just embraced and not thought about, like not challenged. Mm. So to me, that's a failure of the film. But I don't hate it. I didn't think it was bad. I thought, if nothing else, I would stand behind some of the performances in it, this couple scenes, especially the scene, like, what's his fuck? I forget his name. I'm sorry. Peter Dinklage gets one scene in that movie that is, I think, the movie-defining scene, and it's really good. And there are parts of the movie that are really good, but there are also many parts of the movie that are quite bad. I think it's a troubled movie. But I don't hate it. I just thought it was kind of messy, and I think it's weird that it's getting awards, and that rubs me the wrong way. So,
Yep, it'll probably get more. I thought it was just bad. Anyway. Yeah. Let's see. Megazone 23 asks, weight loss question for Zach. When you were losing weight, did you wait till you hit your goal before getting new clothes, or did you buy stuff as you dropped the pounds? I lost about 30 pounds currently. Well, first of all, congratulations. Holy shit.
Yeah, congrats, man.
Good job. I lost 30 pounds and my work clothes are getting loose, but I'm aiming to lose another 40 to reach my goal weight. Nice. All right. Halfway there. I'm on the fence whether I should buy stuff that fits me now but won't in a few months, or save the money and wait until I hit my goal and get a new wardrobe at one time. All right, it's a complicated question. I'm going to give you a nuanced answer. So I bought stuff as I dropped the weight. That was a big part of me being able to celebrate my progress, was going and getting new stuff. It gets a little expensive. I actually wouldn't recommend doing it more than once or twice. Throughout the process, if your goal is to lose 70 pounds, you're probably going to go down at least two sizes. So I don't know what size you are now, but you're probably down to the middle size before you go down to the final size. I dropped four sizes and lost something like 110 pounds total, 115 pounds total. And I went from an XXL to a medium and bought the phase I should not have gone in for was XL. I should have gone straight to large, because I occasionally still wear a large if I'm feeling like it. You know, mm-hmm. It's one of those situations. Get a few things now that fit you better, that make you feel good about yourself. You've earned it. You deserve it. And you get to go shop for new clothes. That's one of the fun and cool things you get to do now that you've lost the weight. So right. I think you should do that. Mm-hmm. But wait until you've hit your goal and you're comfortable with the way your body looks, and you feel like you're satisfied there, and you're not going to lose a significant amount more weight, and then start replacing your clothes. However, if you hit like a medium and you're pretty sure you're not going to go to a small, you can just start buying stuff that fits you. Mm-hmm. And it'll just fit you a little differently as you continue to lose weight. But congratulations on your progress so far. My best to you as you continue your journey. I think you've made incredible progress, and yeah, congratulations, man.
Yeah.
Keep me posted. Let me know how it goes. All right. Nas Anime wants to know, one of this season's Yashike, Laid Back Camp, seems to be on a mission to not only entertain, but teach the viewer about camping, where to go, what to bring. Have you ever been encouraged to try a new activity because of an anime? Once again, it is difficult to come up with examples right off the top of my head. However, anime has gotten me interested in a variety of bands and different types of music. I went on a little classical music learning and reading spree, I guess, a while ago, probably 7 or 8 years ago now. As a result of the score to, was it Gankutsuo that did that? No, it was something else. Princess Tutu? I think it was Princess Tutu.
I mean, you didn't attach that hard to that show, so I didn't.
No, but I had to do it for something else, and then I got interested in it and went on a spiel.
Right.
On a spree. Uh-huh. It happened. It happened once. I wish I could remember the exact details. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, no, it's happened from time to time. Anime that are about a certain topic, I tend to go to them after I'm already interested in the subject to begin with. So, like, when I was learning about the Tokugawa Shogunate, I was watching a lot of anime that are about the Tokugawa Shogunate. You know, that kind of thing. So it kind of goes in the other direction for me a lot. What about you, Jacob?
Yeah, the only thing that I was like, I really want to do this, but I just had no, like, outlet or opportunity or whatever, so I was just like, oh, it seems neat, was I was, like, I was really, like, inspired, I guess, or, like, tempted to get into, like, trying to play volleyball by watching Haikyuu. It just, and I looked up, like, volleyball competition videos and stuff like that, and I also did the same thing with, I was already kind of interested in ice skating, but I just hadn't kept up with it in a few years, but I definitely went on a, like, exhibition and stuff like that spree after, in terms of, like, watching them on YouTube and stuff like that after Yuri on Ice and caught up with that stuff. So usually for me it's sports because I'm not interested in sports for the most part, but I like some stuff. I like really either really violent or performance-based art performance-based sports like gymnastics and ice skating, and I don't know, volleyball was just kind of fun to watch. So, like, that's usually that's point. What I do.
I'm really glad you brought up sports because it reminded me how often that happened, although it did go in the other direction for me in some cases. So, like, I was into basketball, and I got into basketball in college and then watched Slam Dunk after that.
Mm-hmm.
Judo, however, which I got into by watching Iwara, I did go to some exhibition judo stuff a little after college, I think. For funsies, and I know a little bit about judo as a result of that brief exploration, thanks to Yowara. So,
right.
Yeah, there's a couple of things that happened like that. Hajime no Ippo, like, I had watched plenty of box, like, lots. Okay, not lots. A not insignificant amount of boxing before watching Hajime no Ippo. But I would say I watched more boxing as a result in the years after watching Hajime no Ippo. I would say that's true. I don't know. These shows are just like they're woven into the fabric of my life. So when I have to sit and think, like, did that get me to do that, or was I already into that and then I watched that? Like, it's interesting.
Uh-huh.
Anyways, that is it. Is that all you had on that one?
Yeah, I guess the opposite version of this is like for as much anime as about this, it doesn't have any impact on you. Is like for as many anime as I've seen that are like cooking or like food porn things, it never makes me want to go try, or because I have a weird relationship with food. So even though I've seen a ton of Food Wars and find it fascinating, it never inspires me to actually cook or go look or go try the foods in question. I'm just like, oh, this is really entertaining and that's really neat, but almost from like more like a scientific perspective, I'm like, oh, that's what heat does to something in that kind of pressure cooker at that level of like make more like a Mythbusters approach and less like I want to eat that, but like that's like an outlier for me because I was like, man, I watched a lot of foodie anime but I'm not really inspired to food anything, so
Yeah, that stuff usually makes me want to cook stuff. Try to cook,
right? But that's true of a lot of people. They either want to, like, when they watch this stuff, like, they want to cook it or they want to go eat it, and it doesn't have that impact on me at all.
We asked for Lolly yet. I have no idea how to pronounce your Twitter name. Asks, Ponycan USA has not released anything for about 2 years. Do you think they'll officially pull out from the distribution scene or quietly fade away? What are your thoughts on their overall venture? How likely is it that someone else picks up their licenses for home release? Okay, first part of the question. If they don't have to announce, well, that didn't work, they probably won't. The fact that they haven't put out anything or announced anything in 2 years means they're probably done for good. I wouldn't expect them to make any more announcements. I would not expect them to say anything at all unless they are somehow made to or have to. That's just true of any business that fails, I guess, which I think that's what happened there. Thoughts on their overall venture? I don't know what they were thinking with those crazy portfolio-sized, like, 11.5 by 17 format.
Of shows like Denki Guy that no one watched.
Yeah, Denki Guy, and, like, there's a follow-up comment here from Chris Adamson who said, like, I bought Yuki Yuna Season 1 there, and, like, cool, that's great. The big, I think he says he bought the Standard Edition, which I'm pretty sure just came in a normal case. But, like, we got a few of those in as samples. They were huge and weird and did not fit in any normal shelf thing at all. And, like, you know, they were taking advice. They looked at what Aniplex did and decided to try and get into the market themselves. And then they looked at what NIS America did. Do you remember the NIS boxes, the big ones?
Yep.
Well, those sold out usually. Or they sold out often enough to where I'm pretty sure, like, that was the idea. Like, oh, then people like non-standard size. They want a limited edition to be oversized. Mm-hmm. Not like that, though.
Yeah.
Not like this. And
not like this.
There were these gigantic clamshell cases that were prone to breaking at the tops and bottoms. And, like, came with these giant art inserts and everything. And, like, I just, you know, when I would get them in the mail, I'd be like, who is this for? Like, it doesn't really even look particularly good on your shelf.
Yeah.
It looks like it is some ancient, outdated, like, check out my Visuo disc.
Yeah, it looked like an outdated format where you would just pull out the whole thing.
Yeah, it looks like you're going to pull out a caddy that has a disc on it that holds like 50 megs worth of information from like 1993 or something.
Like a giant brick-sized floppy that you're going to plug into something.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I aesthetically...
8-track, that's what it looks like.
And that's all a matter of taste. Whoever was in charge down there was like, all right, I think this is cool. All right, you know, everyone's got different tastes. Like, no harm, no foul on them. But I don't think it worked out. I don't think that they made a lot of great choices. I think the licenses that they wound up choosing were a little questionable. Yuki Yuna probably was not a bad choice, and neither was Sound Euphonium, but virtually everything else they put out. Like, they hung on to Raka. Like, I know that was a big deal, right?
Mm-hmm.
But that show just crashed and burned. And, like, that's not their fault. That's mm-hmm. not Pony Canyon's fault. But they were trying to sell giant, wildly expensive, incredibly awkwardly sized limited editions of a show that just ate shit.
And dropped itself into the mud. And there were four episodes on each one of those.
Yeah, and you were buying singles. You're buying episodes 1 through 4 or 5 through 8. You know, yeah. I mean, even Aniplex doesn't really do that.
Yeah.
You know, they're at least selling you the whole thing. So, yeah,
like, the most Aniplex does is, like, the first 7 or 8 episodes.
Yeah.
But that's it.
I hope someone else picks up their licenses for home release. I hope someone grabs the KyoAni stuff that they had. I hope someone grabs all the things. If someone wants something that Pony Canyon put out, like, Yuki Yuna has fans. People like that show. You know, it would be nice if they made it available so people could buy it. But... You know, I wouldn't hold my breath on everything, but the KyoAni stuff, like, there's money to be made there, so I would imagine someone was going to want to make it. And I'm assuming Pony Canyon's not, like, against the idea of having it released again.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Moonsway asks, notice there have been better romantic anime in the past few seasons. Are there any romance anime you guys are fond of or recommend? Or any anime with good romantic subplots, elements, or couplings? Romance anime... so the two that I can kind of point to that you'd probably also bring up would be Scum's Wish and MMO Junkie as, like, two ends of the spectrum, right? Uh-huh. Like, one's, like, super realistic, brutal, these people are terrible. No, realistic, but, like, it's more cynical. Much more cynical. MMO Junkie is a lot more like, look at these relatable nerds, right? Interacting in a relatable way and getting into a relationship in a relatable way and, like, it feels like they're less, those shows at least, are less about the fantasy and a little bit more trying to be relatable on, like, a real level instead of just escapism. Like, so, like, you know, you might actually encounter some of these feelings instead of just fairy tale or whatever shoujo romance that has these, you know, the usual milestones that you expect from a shoujo type of romance.
Uh-huh.
I don't know. But that's what I look for. If someone's going to say, like, this show is about love, I'm like, okay, what are you saying about it?
Mm-hmm.
That's what I want to know.
Yeah. It's really, really context dependent. I think I'm okay with cute romance, like cutesy-wootsy romance, if it's funny. Like, My Love Story is a really good example of this, where that's as cutesy-wootsy, like, sort of escapist as you can get. It isn't really, like, realistic or relatable per se, but, like, the thing that's relatable about it is the highs of love, is the euphoria, is the infatuation euphoria. It captures that in a way that's not, like, glamorizing. It just feels real, but everything else is extremely silly and, like, you know, goofy, I guess, and what makes it work is that, like, you know, the lead is not the kind of person that you would feel that for. So you know it's real because it's not like, oh, he's just pretty and so I feel this way, or, you know, he's rich or whatever. He's none of those things. So but beyond that, I guess for some reason my brain always comes back to the thing that I like most in romance that you almost never see is friendship romance. And this was a really good example of this is Spice and Wolf, which a lot of people like because it's not about, like, these two, like, oh, they just don't get along and they hate each other, but really they love each other, because it's not real. And that's not, like, I mean, it might be real for some people, but this is a really, really heteronormative thing that I don't, I said the dirty word, heteronormative, but it's true. Like, it's the wedding cake that has, like, the bride dragging the groom to the altar kind of a thing that I don't, like, Blue Spring Ride is a good example of this. A lot of other, like, kind of crappy, stereotyped shoujo type things. But also shonen type, like harem style things where the girl's a stereotype, and if you put in enough kindness coins, eventually she'll be dairy dairy for you. Like, that stuff doesn't work for me. I prefer stories where they're just buddies, and then over time they realize, like, oh, I love you. And Spicy Wolf is a really, really good example of that, because, you know, he first meets her when she's literally naked, but she doesn't really give a shit about that because she's a god figure. She's not, like, human. And then beyond that, it's just them trying to navigate the medieval business world together. And they do get on each other's nerves, but it's not like, well, you're a man, so you couldn't understand, or, oh, women are so fickle. Like, it's none of that stuff. And it's not like, she doesn't understand my feelings. Like, both of them know the entire time that they have feelings for each other, but they're just not important. They're just like, you know, I have a place to get to, and you have a business to start, and we're going to help each other do this. And then by the end, we're going to discover that we really want to do all that stuff together. So I think Spice and Wolf is one of my favorite
it's a good one.
Illustrations of a relationship that's, like, even though it's a light novel and it's kind of escapist and she's a fox god or she's a wolf god, like, it feels real. So that's a good example, I think.
Okay. Took a little break there, but we're back to it to finish out these last couple of Twitter questions. I feel refreshed. Jacob, you feel refreshed?
Yeah, relatively speaking. After, right, like 15 minutes or whatever. You
know. Let's get to these last questions here. This is kind of a big one. I feel like there's a lot to say about this, and I keep thinking, like, we should do a podcast on it, but I don't know how that fits into AnCast, or, you know, if I would get a lot of complaints about, like, hey, no movie podcast or whatever. Like, I don't know. You know, I don't know. Maybe we can make it a subscriber thing. I don't know. Anyway, the question is...
Yeah, I was going to say, well, what's the...
Exotic Swami says, what are your opinions on The Last Jedi? And what are your thoughts of the negative backlash that it's getting?
Right. It is time once again to talk about the Star Wars, a topic that is never discussed on the internet ever at all.
Yeah, I think The Last Jedi is complicated. I think it's the best Star Wars movie, but it's only the best Star Wars movie in the context of every single piece that's come before it.
Right.
So, like... You know, I mean, I have a lot of complicated feelings about it. I wrote about it a little bit about one part of that movie and how it made me feel on my personal blogging site, which is just zachburchie.com. You can go there. The article's called My Hero Luke Skywalker. But that was just, like, part of one thing. And, like, there's so much more to talk about with that movie.
Mm-hmm.
I really loved it. Like, you liked it a lot more than I think you were expecting.
Yeah, well, no, I mean, I enjoyed The Force Awakens. I was like, oh, this is basically just, like, a New Hope, but with characters that I kind of care more about than I did the first time with that triad and side characters. Like, I like... The Force Awakens characters just a little more, but it wasn't, like, revolutionary to me. I was just like, oh, this is really enjoyable, and I like that they use practical effects. And I've talked about The Force Awakens before and how much I like it, and I really like Kylo Ren as a villain. I think it's a really good, strong, modern take on villains, especially when so many genre movies have been getting villains wrong, just doing the worst shitty villains, like Marvel movies infamously have trouble getting decent villains. And so I really dug that. But Last Jedi, I was next level. This was the first Star Wars movie that I really felt like it was about something that, I don't know, really spoke to me. And it felt like it actually really took risks. And they did pay off. Like, some people are like, oh, just because it's a risk doesn't mean it automatically... They did pay off. Like, the movie is even just a little bit arty or a little bit to the left of blockbuster structure. And people are like, oh, it's too weird. And I'm like, really? Like, this is not that weird. This is not even a little bit weird. It's just weird for Star Wars.
Also, like, you want to talk about a movie with a weird structure. Like, Marvel movie number a billion. Like, Civil War.
Long episode of a television show. And that's
Age
structural.
Age of Ultron. Yeah. Weird structure. Incredibly weird.
It's like, structured like a television episode, except for instead of 45 minutes, it's 2.5 hours.
Yeah, and like,
people have gotten used to that.
That was kind of the one, and while I was watching it the first time, I was kind of like, I don't know about the pacing. But then the second time I saw it, I was like, no, this totally is fine. And then the third time, I was like, no, this is actually great.
The whole the whole detour where they don't accomplish anything, spoilers, I guess, but the whole detour where they don't accomplish anything is in itself the point. It makes an extremely strong point. It's not just like, oh, well, you know, if you look at it this way. No, like, that stuff is extremely important to the movie. I loved it. I thought it was... really strong material, and it wasn't that weird. It's not like, oh, it's totally subversive and breaking down Star Wars.
No,
I don't think so. I think it's celebrating Star Wars. It's just being honest about reality in the context of Star Wars.
And it's still also holding up the things. Giving you something exciting to look forward to, because now it's like anything can happen.
Yeah, people that said like, oh, I don't like this because it destroys the innocence, or it destroys the what Star Wars is about, just to be dark. And I don't think that's true. I think there's a lot about the movie that extremely holds up and celebrates and embraces what Star Wars does well. It just challenges things in like a pretty loving way, I think. Like, that whole scene with Yoda is not like brutally taking down Luke Skywalker or taking down the old movies or anything like that. It's just being honest about the fact that we live in a world that's a little different now, and that we want different kinds of stories, and maybe it's time to like take risks. Like, that's what the scene's about. It's not that, you know, it's not that daring. It's just good. It just feels like people gave a shit and they like said something worth saying. That's all, you know.
Yeah, man. Yeah, thematically rich.
Yes,
just so much to chew on. Great, like, just easily.
Good shit.
Like, maybe not easily, but like, and you know, and I grew up in the 80s, so like, you know, I grew up with all that shit. I'm that guy. I'm the fucking guy. This took so many chances and changed so much stuff thematically. Like, it almost took it all and just kind of like twisted it to, you know, 90 degrees or whatever, to a different perspective. And I thought it was like incredibly bold, like hugely bold. Like, you kind of can't believe they let him do it.
Right.
Like, wow, they let you go here? Like, that's nuts.
Yeah. And the scene, well, like,
the stuff that happens in that movie thematically, you're like, whoa.
It's a movie for people who want to be emotionally challenged. And if you want to go to Star Wars for escapism and to revisit nostalgia, like, The Force Awakens was kind of like that. Is like, this is much like what you grew up with. This is like nostalgia, only like now there's women and minorities in it, and now there's like, there is some moral ambiguity where there wasn't before. But other than that's just an update that seems necessary after 40 years or whatever. But like, it was largely like the same kind of thing that you've had before. The Last Jedi is not that. It is for people who want to be emotionally challenged by this story. Like, to be
questioned.
To be forced to ask questions about the world and characters. And I think that is about, like, whether the light side or the dark side of the Force actually exists. And, you know, what would happen to someone like Luke after 40 years have passed? Like, because those are valid questions. And by answering them, it's fucking really great. So,
yeah. And, you know, like, the thing that a lot of stuff that I took away from it, but I really liked how he just, like, rips the elitism out of it. Like, just tries his hardest to rip the elitism out of it. No more magic blood. Like, your parents are nobodies.
Yeah, spoilers.
No one has a quote-unquote place. You're not destined to be great because you're part of some fucking family or you have magic blood. Like, and in the, you know, in the end, the, you know, they show, like, well, the end is a flashback to something that happens a little bit earlier, but, like, they show, like, they take a detour, a plot detour, I guess it's kind of a detour, seems connected to the main plot to me, but, like, they totally destroy a casino full of war profiteers.
Right.
And in the end, you know, one of the kids who's like caring for the, you know, beasts of burden that they're racing around the track for war profiteers to bet on is like shown as like, oh, this is what's up. This kid's about to fuck up some space Nazis.
That's
what you have to get excited about. And that's fucking amazing. Cause like in like, you know, the original trilogy, I love it, you know, in the unhealthy way that most people do, but like,
I don't think it's unhealthy. It's a simple story where the answers, it seems like every time that Lucas wanted to come up with a twist, they're related. Yeah. Well, and any time that, and this is common. We see it in anime all the time. It's a big thing in shonen, anime and manga. It's in Harry Potter. It's in a lot of stuff aimed at that audience. That's sort of classic and basic, which is anytime you want to add a twist, it's they were related. Like, yeah. That's anytime you want to add a dramatic gravitas, it's like, oh, this person on this opposite side or this whatever from you is your sister, your aunt, your cousin, was in love with your mother once, whatever. Like, and that's, I mean, like, it has an immediate effect, but it's not challenging. It's basic because it's not something that you can think of in a, like, in a beyond you sort of way. Like, oh, this is melodramatic, and oh, that would be horrifying if that happened to me. But you're not really feeling it. You're not feeling it on an intimate, like, uncomfortable level. It's just like, oh, yeah, that is dramatic. It's a soap opera. And, you know, it's fine, and it's good, and it's entertaining. Like, those movies are classics for a reason. But, yeah, I didn't think I was ever going to be challenged by Star Wars. And I was. It was like, all right, moral ambiguity. There's no destined anything. Sometimes these side roads lead to, like, no success. I love the Benicio del Toro scene where... after he sells them out or whatever. I feel like in any other Star Wars movie or lots of other movies that are sort of aimed at families and being kind of basic, when Finn yells at him, like, you're wrong about this, you're wrong about being morally bankrupt. And I feel like normally, like, you know, that guy would be like, well, haha, I just go where the money leads, kid, or whatever. Like, maybe even Han Solo would play that up before becoming a good guy. But Benicio del Toro's character just says, maybe. Like, but it doesn't really matter, does it? Like, this is how I live my life. Which is... a thing that, like, a person would say instead of being like, aha, I am greedy. Like, it's just like, look, this works for me, and I don't really care whether it's right or wrong. It keeps me alive. Like,
but you'll note that it aids the oppressor.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, oh, that's accurate. Like, I don't know. It's just good shit. Like, so yeah, Last Jedi is easily, to me, the best Star Wars movie. It couldn't exist without all the others, obviously. But it was really important to me.
I don't know. Dexter Jetster, you know.
God. Is that's in a deleted scene in the prequels?
No, that is in Attack of the Clones, my friend.
Oh, it wasn't even an extra scene.
Jester tells Obi-Wan the location of the Kamino clone lab
in his 50s diner.
Now I stop talking about it.
Ugh.
Patrick Jones asks, what was being a judge for the Crunchyroll Anime Awards like, and how did a silent voice get nominated? Okay, how did a silent voice get nominated for best animation over Your Name? Well, I'm not so certain I can talk about... They had some restrictions on talking about being a judge.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not so certain I can talk about it yet. I apologize. I should have looked that up before recording this. But when I figure that out, I will happily talk about it. It was an interesting experience. I don't want to build it up too much or anything. I just also don't want to piss off whoever it is invite me to do that. So
right.
Let me double check that. I'd be happy to talk about it. As for a silent voice getting nominated over Best Animation for Your Name. So one thing, and now this is just speculation on my behalf, but in my own voting, Your Name felt like it was a 2017 or 2016 thing. And so it was because it was split over those years. I feel like it kind of got the shaft because a lot of critics and stuff put it on their 2016 list, like me included. And, like, it was talked about in 2016 kind of weekly because it was just about to come out.
Yeah.
And then this year, it had been out. People kind of considered it more of a 2016 thing. And it didn't get a lot of, you know...
And when you factor into that 2017 by itself felt 8 years long, you could see why, you know, people might be like, oh, well, wasn't that a last year thing? And it's like, well, technically, no. It's just, it was in January and you've forgotten because time is moving, like... lightning speed right now.
Yeah, so like a silent voice is fresher in people's minds. That's a big deal when it comes to awards voting. They might have seen it more recently, and they might again associate Your Name more with 2016 and like, well, we talked about that last time, it feels like, which is kind of a weird sentiment, but that's kind of my read on it. That's kind of what happened there.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the simple version of that is I think a silent voice was just fresher in people's heads. I think they saw it more recently.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of it. Let's see. Helvetica Standard asks, has Jake played the Not Urobuchi Psychopass visual novel that's on PlayStation Plus this month? Oh, I should get that. I think I did add that to our little queue. It's free on PlayStation Plus, which is a subscription service. The Psychopass visual novel. Have you touched that?
Nope. Okay. I have not.
Are you interested in it?
Yeah. You know, when I get time to check it out, like, I'm interested enough that I would look at it for sure.
Gero the Hero asks, if you could pick one anime this season to tell the studio to go back to the drawing board and redo it, what would it be? And what would you tell them to fix specifically? This requires an amount of hubris on my behalf that I'm not comfortable.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that I would. I mean, there's stuff where I would just like, why is this made? But that's completely
different.
There's
a reason behind everything that you see. Mm-hmm. Any suggestion that I just sort of off the cuff make about like, hey, Junji Ito collection, go back to the drawing board and make your animation better. I don't know what kind of restraints those guys are working with, what kind of time they have, what kind of staff they're working with, how well everyone's getting along, you know, whether or not there's a huge, horrible crunch or whatever, like what kind of, if they don't have any resources, like you never know. So like,
I guess the most
doing any prescriptive stuff from my stance just feels kind of, I don't know, it feels like hubris. Like it's not my place, you know?
Yeah. I guess the most like clement, sort of respectful way that you could answer this is like, which anime do you wish could have been like better, like you don't think is good but had like potential? And I think you already said it was Junji Ito collection.
Yeah, I wish like, the animation on that were better, but I wouldn't be like, hey.
Yeah, it's like, oh, I wish this was better given that. Yeah. You know,
last couple here. Chuodori asks, Tokyopop has arisen from the grave and announced some new titles. Will it be second time lucky, or have they well and truly burnt their bridges with the community? You know, Tokyopop seems to just do what Tokyopop's going to do, and they seem to ignore the quote-unquote, I'm making big quotes with my fingers here, haters. The haters,
To the left.
I believe they have placed the haters to the left in their mind. This is from Tokyopop's standpoint. I am not saying, oh, Tokyopop, put those haters to the left. I'm not saying that.
Right.
At all. I'm saying from their perspective, haters to the left. And so they will forge ahead. Will they have success? I don't know. When it comes to licensing, if you're putting out a book that has a title that people want and you do a competent job at it, people are probably going to buy it. The number of people willing to boycott you over your previous perceived or real, is probably significantly less than the number of people who just wouldn't want to buy the physical book. And frankly, if your production staff is unrelated to the previous people and, you know, whatever, most people I feel are going to ignore it. That's just my feeling on it. And if they're putting out books people want, people will buy them. You would have to organize a boycott, I think, in order to really coalesce those negative feelings. That is just, I think, the reality of it. Good or bad, that I'm not willing to make a judgment call on. Tokyopop has made a tremendous number of mistakes. And they are somehow still alive. So, you know, well, all right. We'll see what happens next. Any thoughts on that, Jacob?
I wonder if they're going to re-release a new print run of Bizengast.
They have, several times. You can get that in any Barnes & Noble, in collector's editions, and I think they released Omni...
Yes, but I meant another one, because they've done it many times already.
Omnibus, yes. Another one, yeah.
Will they do it again? Yeah.
Okay. Soulful Chris, now I haven't had time to watch these, but he asks about episodes 2 and 3 of Junji Ito. He thought they were an improvement.
It's mostly more of the same. It depends on, like, so the strongest part was the Forever Dreaming, Forever Nightmare guy. And that was just kind of like, the material was Junji Ito's, like, straightforward horror story with a message. And, yeah, the fact of the matter is, like, Junji Ito just pumps out, like, a massive amount of weird stories and stuff like that. And so the ones that are the most, like a Twilight Zone episode are going to be the ones that work in that format, because it's because the story is strong enough that it doesn't matter how limp the execution is. But all the rest of them, like, you have to have good execution in order for this to have the impact, because it's just imagery or it's just a feeling. And since they don't have that, those stories won't work. But if it has like a message and it is like kind of a clever story that has like sort of a strong point, it'll work. So yeah, my point is like, 2 and 3 had maybe one or two of those in there, but like, I don't think it's really the show improving. I think it's just some of the material will work with limp execution and some of it won't.
Okay. From Divine Nega, he asks, any guesses on why Sunrise decided to ditch Keiichi Sato and the director from the movies for the second season of Tiger and Bunny? And do you think they'll be able to maintain the quality?
I mean, that was like a decade ago. So I think it's probably contract conflicts, or he didn't, you know,
didn't
like
have time.
Yeah. It's like, this stuff gets planned out far enough in advance.
Who knows?
A mystery. But I'm just saying, I don't think it was, you don't have to immediately assume, oh, bad blood, or they didn't want to work with him. It's been 10 years, so sometimes these things don't match up.
Yeah, hopefully it'll still be good.
Yeah. The CG would probably have improved.
Kind of over Tiger and Bunny.
Yeah. It was,
okay.
I would be interested in a reboot that's more to modern tastes, because, like, it's very easy to continue.
Maybe that's
that story.
What I want, yeah.
Yeah, it's easy to continue that story without much worry of continuity. You can jump on with a second season or with a reboot. The CG will probably be better, because there's a lot of CG in that show. So hopefully they will have improved that.
Yanagi asks, is there enough free-flowing money in the industry for a reboot of Angel Beats? And would that give... That would give creative staff enough episodes to tell the story that they want to.
I think all of Key's effort right now, Key Visual Arts' effort right now, is going into, respective to Angel Beats, not all of their effort, period, but is going into just trying to make the visual novel that was supposed to come out years ago. So I don't think they have, that was an advertisement for a piece of software that never... surfaced, so I think that's just going to be their white whale that they continue to, like, pick away at until maybe they complete it someday. Like, that's a troubled project, so I don't think that they would make another anime. I think they would consider
once it's done, if they'll need that as a source of revenue,
right? Like, they might, like, go like, hey, maybe another anime once they complete
sure.
it.
Yeah, well, why wouldn't you?
Yeah, well, I, other than money, I can't imagine why.
You'd just be relieved that the game is finished.
Yeah, I'm sure they are, because how long has that been in production now? For almost 8 years, almost a decade.
Okay. Land of Obscusion asks, what's the greater offense with Oscar nominations? That the Disaster Artist only got a Best Adapted Screenplay nomination only. I thought that was a stretch.
Yeah, I was like, that's enough for that,
or
I think.
The Boss Baby. All right, well... I don't get offended by Oscar nominations. I like to make jokes about them. Like, it's kind of funny to pretend like you take the Oscars really seriously, I guess. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I like to make jokes about it. But, look, I don't think The Disaster Artist deserved Best Adapted Screenplay because, like, it was not a very good adaptation of that book. Like, it was not. Mm-hmm. It was a fun movie. Like, it was a really good time at the movies. I laughed a lot.
Right.
But, like, I mean, I laughed because of the performances and the familiar circumstances. And, oh, look, I remember these parts from the hilarious film The Room.
Yeah, and
right?
the material is gold, basically. Yeah, and you had really good impressions of a couple characters. Not,
yeah, but
not
like
Mark,
best
but adapted, everybody else.
Yeah, but Best Adapted Screenplay? Yeah. Nah. But I'm not, like, mad about it. Yeah. Also, The Boss Baby is a glossy animated movie that I guess Academy voters liked. So there you go.
Or it had a big marketing push.
You know, a lot of Academy voters are old. Yeah. Do you know what old people like?
Family movies. For
what else do they like? Old people
babies?
Love. Yeah. Hey, there you go. Babies. Mm-hmm. There you go. All right. Jillian29 asks, I've been subjected to Glitter Force and Glitter Force Doki Doki by my 9-year-old daughter. I don't know why I'm hitting this so hard. By my 9-year-old daughter. I really enjoyed them, but my question is this. Why go out of the way to whitewash and de-Japanify both series, but then name the sequel Doki Doki?
I don't know, licensing approval.
I don't know, calm down, first of all. No, you are not the worked up one. That is funny. If they're basic, I mean, Doki Doki is kind of like a. I mean, you see that on the wall of like stores in the mall. Mm-hmm. You know, I could. You're right. It's kind of funny because it's like but yeah. I mean, they just thought it was catchy. Mm-hmm. They're desperate to get people to watch that, I think.
Yeah.
I'm surprised another season of it came out, because it seemed like it came out, no one cared, the end.
Right, well, you know, it's Netflix, so...
Yeah, I don't know. Alright, Custom Zaku asks, almost done here. I remember the original Basilisk anime being relatively popular, but it seems few people are keeping up with the sequel. Has it been too long, or was making a sequel not just a good idea? Or just not a good idea? It's been too long.
Yeah, it's been too long, and that sequel is like... $2.
It's an L.
They took an L on that one, I think.
Didn't know resources or time or something, but it don't look good. When I saw it, I was like, what? A sequel to Basilisk?
Yeah, what the fuck?
I remember the giant box, the like collector's edition box set of Basilisk. Mm-hmm. That was one of those Gonzo shows that Funimation made a big deal out of in like the early 2000s.
Uh-huh.
Like that, it was like Basilisk, Speed Grapher. And there was one other one, and I'm trying to remember what it was. But, yeah, anyway, Gonzo shows. Okay. Yellow Redfield asks, in your opinion, this is the last question, What is the Star Wars of anime?
Isn't it Gundam? In Japan.
Now, there's several different ways to approach this. In my estimation, and what I feel is I have commonly heard, is that Gundam is the Star Trek.
Right, yeah.
Of Japan, which I agree with. Mm-hmm. That seems like an apt comparison. Except that Gundam is dramatically more successful in Japan than Star Trek is anywhere.
Yes.
So, I mean, that aside, it is an apt comparison because it's a big, sprawling, complicated science fiction franchise that is known, like, hardcore nerds are into it, and there are big theme park attractions and everything based on it, and, like, it's enough, it's woven into popular culture enough over a long enough period of time to where, yeah, you could compare it easily to Star Trek.
If you mean, like, omnipresent thing omnipresent for adults
woven
and families.
Into the fabric of One society Piece. Itself, it's One Piece.
Yes. The answer to your question is One Piece. It is nothing like Star Wars, but if you mean, like, biggest pop cultural thing for all demographics,
it just doesn't
it's
have,
One Piece.
It just doesn't have the time. It just doesn't have the time, the amount of time. Mm-hmm. But I would say that is the chief difference. But it just hasn't. It's a thing over fewer generations of people from youth. Mm-hmm. So few, like, only children since the 90s have been able to you know, have grown up with One Piece. Right. Only 90s kids could have grown up with One Piece. So no one from the 60s, 70s, 80s, none of those people. So that's the only thing really impeding it. But if it had come out 20 years earlier, like, for instance, Dragon Ball, which I think is maybe the other thing, but probably not at the level that One Piece is right now.
Right.
But we just woven into the fabric of popular culture there. Mm-hmm. You know, it in terms of just, like, one-to-one, like, genre, like, for largely for kids and teenagers and also adults, like, it's a cross-generational family thing. Yeah, I would say One Piece for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I think that wraps us up. Dog.
All right.
Thanks for hanging out with me.
Of course. Till next time.
Yeah. All right, thanks. Okay, that's our show. The theme song is Bucharest. It's by the band The New Division. You can check them out at newdivisionmusic.com. Don't forget, subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher Play Music, Google Play Music, Stitcher Radio, and then also on YouTube. My channel is called ANN Zach. We really appreciate it if you left comments and ratings and reviews and all that stuff. You know, that's good for us. Anyway, thanks a lot. Thanks for listening. We'll see y'all next week.